Hello, this is Tom Heck with TeachMeTeamwork.com, and I'm absolutely excited to have on the line with me today Stephen M. R. Covey, who is the former CEO of Covey Leadership Center, which under his stewardship became the largest leadership development company in the world. A Harvard MBA, Stephen Covey had joined the Covey Leadership Center as a client developer and later became national sales manager and then president and CEO. And under his direction, the company grew rapidly and profitably, achieving an Inc. 500 status and recognition. Covey personally led the strategy that propelled his father's books, Dr. Stephen R. Covey, Covey's The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, to the number one best-selling business book in the 20th century, according to CEO Magazine. And as president and CEO, Covey nearly doubled revenues to $112 million while increasing profits by 12 times. During that period, both customer and employee trust reached new highs, and the company expanded throughout the world into over 40 countries. Over the years, Stephen Covey has gained considerable respect and influence with executives and leaders of Fortune 500 companies, as well as with mid and small size organizations he's consulted in. Prior to becoming CEO, he personally led consulting teams that implemented principle-centered leadership in numerous organizations, including the Saturn Division of General Motors, PepsiCo, Marriott International, Conoco, DuPont, and many others. Covey recently co-founded and is the CEO of his own firm, Covey Link, which is a learning and consulting practice focused on enabling leaders and organizations to increase and leverage trust to achieve superior performance. He's recognized as a leading authority on creating high trust, high performance organizations. And he's currently writing a book entitled The Speed of Trust, which is expected out in 2006. And this book represents over a decade of research and practice on how creating high trust within organizations propels speed, influence, and results. And Stephen, I'd like to welcome you to the call.
Hey, thank you very much, Tom, and delighted to be here.
Well, we're going to be talking about trust today, and I'd first like to start with sort of building a case for our listeners for trust, because I think trust is a common phrase that we're going to hear in amongst the people who are going to be listening to this recording, people who work with teams or are training teams or are trying to figure out a way to help their team work better together. I think most people would agree that somehow trust plays into a high-performing team, but exactly how? So at your website, I found a statement that said, sparked by recent world events, a powerful global renaissance of trust has begun. What do you mean by that, a powerful global renaissance?
Simply this idea, Tom, that trust has long been misunderstood, underestimated, neglected, even ignored as a genuine factor in business relationships and life. And that what's happened is there's been some of these corporate scandals and different things in our society that have really created huge distrust, and we've seen trust lowering in almost all dimensions of our society, such that people are becoming aware that this is not just some nice talk about thing, just some soft thing, but this is a real tangible, impactful variable that's affecting all of us. And my whole objective is to try to take what is often seen as soft and make it hard, what is seen as intangible, and actually say, I can make this trust issue tangible, real, measurable. Trust is often seen as slow, taking forever, and I'm going to demonstrate actually that there's nothing as fast as the speed of trust. And so we're seeing this happen all around us, and my objective in all that I'm doing in this work is to come at it from the angle of a practitioner, someone that's done it, that's been responsible for growing and building a business, becoming public in the process of building this business through a merger, of really having to make things happen and have learned that the key variable, the hidden variable, the one thing that affects everything else is trust.
Hmm.
And rather than see it as a nice, soft thing, I want to demonstrate this as a tangible, measurable, quantifiable factor that will affect every other dimension of a business or of a relationship.
Well, okay, how about a real-life example from your the mergers and all the businesses that you've worked with? Can you give us an example of where trust was key, and it was when everything was said and done, everybody could look back and say that happened because of high trust.
Absolutely.
If it wasn't for high trust, we couldn't have achieved what we just did.
Absolutely. That I'll make this statement, and then I'll give you a couple of stories,
okay.
Examples. Here's my statement that is a premise that I have, and that is that trust always affects two outcomes. Speed and cost.
Okay.
When trust is low, we will see speed go down and cost will go up. This is a tax. When trust is high, conversely, we will see speed go up and cost will go down. This is a dividend. Now, so low trust is this tax. It impacts speed, it impacts cost. Here's an example of this low trust in action, then I'll give one of high trust in action. We were talking before this interview started about the 9/11 terrorist attacks.
Yes.
In this country, and how extraordinary, impactful those were for negative, and yet how people responded and rallied after it. Well, after those terrorist attacks, our trust or confidence in flying in this country, in the United States, went down quite dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
Because people were aware that there are terrorists out to get us and that our system wouldn't always catch them. So the trust went down, and we had to increase and restore the confidence to fly, and we implemented more robust procedures and safety processes to help compensate for this lower trust in flying. Well, it's helped because we're back to flying normal, etc. But we had to put in place more robust systems and processes through the security. Now, that has helped, but it came at a price because it slowed things down. I used to arrive at my airport about a half hour before I would leave on my flight, four years ago. Today, I've got to arrive about an hour and a half beforehand because it just takes me a whole lot longer, and I can never predict how long it will take. But I know it takes me longer than it used to because that's because we had to put in place more robust systems to increase the trust, but also it's had an impact on cost because you pay for all this increased security.
Mm.
We actually pay a 9/11 terrorist tax with every plane ticket we buy, and we pay for this new Transportation Security Administration. But we're happy to make those payments to increase the trust or confidence in flying. My point is, speed and cost are impacted. See, I recently flew into and out of Tel Aviv, Israel, and when I left Tel Aviv, I needed to arrive at the airport 4 hours before my flight left.
4 hours?
4 hours. See, the trust is so low in that country, and you understand why, the geopolitical environment.
Yes.
Well, the trust is very low. I had to arrive 4 hours before my flight. My bag was unpacked and repacked 3 different times. I was interrogated a couple different times. And all of this took a lot of time and cost a lot of money. I was treated, by the way, like any other passenger. I wasn't singled out.
Mm.
But the trust was so low in that environment, they had to take very robust procedures and processes to substitute for the lack of trust, all of which had a huge impact on speed and on cost. So that's my premise, is that speed and cost are always impacted by trust. Now, I've given a couple of examples where it's negative, where the trust is low, and therefore the impact on speed is it slows things down and it adds cost. But
well,
the
may I ask a question, a quick question about your the example you give there? Could one not say then that to achieve trust, in this case the airline travel industry, to achieve trust is expensive?
Yeah, in this case, yes. To really restore trust was expensive.
Right.
And Another one, take Sarbanes-Oxley. Sarbanes-Oxley is a government response to the lower trust in public markets brought on by the scandals of Enron,
yes,
and WorldCom and the like, where suddenly all these scandals are out there and people started to say, gosh, can you trust these big companies? Can you trust the public markets? And it's vital that we keep that trust. So Congress passes legislation that says, look, we'll go through all these hoops and hurdles that will ensure that the financials are accurate. Well, it has helped. And it has helped maintain and in some cases restore trust in public markets. But at what price? It's had a huge price. It's very expensive to administer and follow Sarbanes-Oxley. Ask any financial person within companies that's responsible for this. It's extremely expensive. It's extremely time-consuming. Speed has gone way down. Cost has gone way up. And yes, to your point, Tom, restoring the trust there, increasing the trust, maintaining the trust was very expensive because we had to put in place all these props at a huge price. And the price is felt on speed and on the cost involved. But let me give you an example of the other direction, because I maintain this, that there's nothing as fast as the speed of trust. And here's what I mean by that. I'll take a recent merger, happened about a year ago. Warren Buffett, the CEO of Berkshire Hathaway, Buffett is seen as one of the most influential and trusted leaders in the world. Well, his company was acquiring a company from Walmart named McLane Distribution. Now, McLane Distribution is a $23 billion enterprise. So this is a big deal. You know, Walmart and Berkshire Hathaway are two big companies, and the acquisition candidate is one of Walmart's companies called McLane, $23 billion. So a big deal among two public companies. Warren Buffett, the CEO of Berkshire Hathaway, he trusted and he built a relationship of trust with the people he was working with at Walmart, such that he felt confidence in them. And here's how he described he was able to do this deal because of that trust that had been established. I quote from his annual report. He said, to make the McLane deal, we had a single meeting of about 2 hours. We then shook hands. 29 days later, Walmart had their money. We did no due diligence. We knew everything would be exactly the way Walmart said it would be, and it was. So here's a $23 billion merger done in less than a month with no due diligence. I used to work on Wall Street, and deals of this size would typically take a year to close, maybe 6 months if you fast-tracked it, 6 months to a year, and you'd spend tens of millions of dollars in due diligence with accountants, attorneys, auditors, validating, verifying that everything's right. But because the trust was here, these public companies were able to do a $23 billion acquisition in 29 days with no due diligence. That's what I mean by speed being high and cost going down when the trust is high.
It's almost hard to believe that someone would do that on a handshake, but if the trust is that high. So help our listeners understand what trust is, and help me understand what trust is, because, as you said, it's the word is thrown around all the time. I have a two-year-old daughter and a six-year-old son, and I talk to them about trust, and you know, I oftentimes have used this metaphor, and that is trust is like a ladder, and let's say that the ladder is leaning up against a four-story building, and I need to climb up, and I start to climb up, and the third rung breaks under my weight, and there's no way I'm going to continue climbing up that ladder because I don't trust it. And is trust? I'm looking for a metaphor that we can look at trust, and I don't know if that one's a good one or not.
I think it is a good metaphor, because you don't trust, meaning you're not confident anymore,
right,
of climbing that, because you're not sure it won't happen again.
Exactly.
And that's too frightening. The risks are too great. So your trust goes down. Your confidence in that goes down. See, I'll give you a very simple definition of trust, Tom. It's simply this. It's confidence. Jack Welch said it best. He said, you know it when you feel it.
Mm.
And, you know, we don't need to go into these all these formula definitions. They're useful in their own right, but confidence is what we're talking about. Now, the opposite of that, the distrust, is this. It's suspicion.
Hmm.
So you think you climb that ladder, one of the rungs caves through, suddenly you're suspicious. You're concerned. You're worried that it's going to happen again. Fear and doubt come in instead of confidence and belief and, you know, assurance, which is all this positive thing of trust. So a way of thinking about trust is just simply to say it's confidence, and its opposite is suspicion. And when you don't trust somebody, you're suspicious about them. You're suspicious about maybe their agenda or their motive, or you're suspicious about their integrity, or you're suspicious about their track record. Or for whatever reason, you may not trust someone, which means you don't have confidence in them. You have suspicion instead of confidence. And so I think your ladder metaphor is great because people can relate to it, and what you lose is confidence, and instead you become suspicious. So trust is about confidence, about this positive assurance as you move forward. Now, when you have this, it's coming because of the fact that I like to say that trust is the overlap of character and competence.
Okay.
See, both these dimensions are vital, character and competence. If you only have one and not the other, you'll tend not to trust in that, or people won't trust in you if you're only one and not the other. In other words, if you're a good person, high in character,
mm-hmm.
but you're not competent, you don't have the track record and the capabilities, then people at the end of the day aren't going to trust you to get the job done.
Yes.
They won't have confidence. The flip side is true as well. If you're really capable and competent, but you're not a person of integrity, at the end of the day, they're not going to trust you either.
They won't enter into an agreement with you. The metaphor or the visual of a father throwing their child up into the air and catching them. You know, there's the child believes. You know, there's the character piece. But if the parent isn't capable, competent to catch their child, they can have the highest character in the world, but if they can't do the job, the child won't trust that person. Or on the flip side, the best child catcher in the world, you know, walks up from the circus, but the child looks at that person and doesn't know who they are, doesn't trust them from the character end of things.
Exactly. So they don't want them to throw them out because they don't know who they are.
Yes.
And their skills are almost irrelevant in that case. They want to know that this person cares for them and is a person of integrity.
Mm.
And all of us intuitively understand this, Tom. We go through our own experience in life, and you trust people that have character and competence. And you yourself are trusted when you have character and competence. And if we're lacking in either of those dimensions, we'll tend not to inspire trust, or we'll only have it for a short period of time. And when the tough times come, the trust will dissipate. I'll give another example. My wife recently had to have some surgery, medical surgery, and she trusts me. I trust her. When it came time to perform the surgery, guess what? She didn't ask me to do it. And why not? Because I'm not a doctor.
Right.
I'm not competent. It's obvious, right?
Right.
So she could trust me, but she wouldn't trust me in that thing because I'm not competent. I need those skills. And so what I'm trying to do to trust is say, look, this is not just about being a good person and only about having integrity. Integrity matters. It's the foundation of this. But so does competence. So does getting results, making things happen, the right things. That also matters. That also creates trust. And if you don't have that, you won't build trust. And when we take this competent side to this, as well as the character, it brings a harder edge to this. And suddenly, this doesn't just become a nice thing to talk about, that it would be good to have trust. It becomes a business-relevant imperative that this is about getting results. It's about character and competence. It's about speed, increasing speed. It's about decreasing cost. And that speaks to people because now we're quantifying this and we're making this tangible, measurable, and therefore something that we can focus on and get improved results as we do it.
Okay, this is great. Well, I want to just quickly take a closer look at what trust is, some myths, and the realities of trust as you see them. And when I saw this chart that you have developed about the myths and the realities of trust, I found a couple quotes because I started thinking about what are the messages that we've all received growing up, and we enter into the world of business and working on teams, and we have these tapes oftentimes playing inside from sometimes parents or teachers about, okay, these are messages that you should understand about trust. And I found one here from Benjamin Franklin. He says, "There's none deceived but he that trusts." And so you have that message, I think a lot of people have received. And then here's one from Abraham Lincoln. "The people, when rightly and fully trusted, will return the trust." So there's all these different messages about trust that we've received. Help me understand some of these myths about trust. Like, you had mentioned that that trust is soft and it's slow, and you've kind of addressed those. But what about this idea that, you know, especially in the business world, that trust is sort of for the wimpy people? It's the, if you have a hard edge, you don't need to worry about that. You can go you can operate at a full capacity without that. It's for wimps.
Yeah. Well, I would say that they're missing it entirely, because Warren Buffett's not a wimp. And he's operating with an ability to move at incredible speed and low cost because of the high trust he's established.
Yeah.
See, he's brought this other dimension to it, which is competence, not just character. Where trust gets this bad name, and it's kind of soft name, is if we only focus on this as kind of a nice-to-have, only an integrity issue and a soft issue, and we sever it from its competence dimensions of capabilities and results, your track record, all of that matters. So we never want to sever it. We always keep it together. But, you know, there is. I guess the question is there some risk in trusting people? The answer to that is yes. There is risk in trusting people. But you know what, Tom? There's more risk in not trusting people. Because if you don't have a belief that you can trust people, then you will literally shut them down, turn them off. You'll lose their hearts, you'll lose their excitement, and you'll bring all kinds of new costs into your business. And so the key here is we need to learn how to have a smart trust. I'm not talking about just trusting anybody and everybody and becoming gullible. See,
What does it mean to be gullible?
Well, it's the other end of suspicious. See, at one end, people are suspicious. They don't trust anyone. On the other end, they're gullible. They're too trusting. They're just kind of just, okay, I believe. And they give their trust too freely. And I'm not talking about that, because you'll get burned. And you know, I'm coming at this from the angle of a practitioner. I've been there. I've done deals with people, some of which I couldn't trust fully. And I had to validate and verify. And so we're talking about developing a smart trust, and learning when and how to extend trust to other people. But the premise is this: if you go forward with a propensity to trust instead of a propensity not to trust, and then backfill from there, in other words, add to that validation, verification, but you go in with a mindset of, I can trust people, I need to make sure that they've got the track record, you'll go better and go farther and faster than if you go in the other direction with a propensity not to trust. And it makes a profound difference. The former CEO of Johnson & Johnson, you know, that had the Tylenol scare?
Yes.
Jim Burke, he was the CEO at the time. And he said this: I have found that by trusting people until they prove themselves unworthy of that trust, a lot more happens. And so the premise is, go in with a propensity or a bias to trust, and yes, you still need to verify and validate, but go in with that bias versus the other way around, which is, I can't trust anybody. No one's trustworthy, because with that, you'll build in all kinds of unneeded costs, and you'll slow everything down. And so go in the other direction, and then backfill from there, And you'll be in a better place.
So you acknowledge that there is risk, and it seems like someone has to be vulnerable. You open yourself up or become more vulnerable as you move towards this continuum away from suspicion and more towards confidence.
Yes, there's no question that do you take some risk? You do. But I'm saying it's a lesser risk than when you don't trust.
Yes.
Because there the costs are extraordinary. They're tangible. They're real. They get built into companies. They get built into relationships. But, yeah, I'm not Pollyannish on this, Tom, where I'm just saying trust everyone. I'm not saying that at all. You'll get burned. That's foolish.
Mm.
That's gullible. To your Ben Franklin comment, listen to this Latin proverb. It is equally an error to trust all men or no man. In other words, it's not, you don't just trust everybody or nobody. The point is that you learn how and to create trust. You learn how to grow it, to establish it. You learn how to extend it. You learn what to look for, where the risks are, and then how to compensate for those risks and how to navigate that. I maintain as you're getting to know people, you extend trust conditionally to them.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to be worthy of it. They've got to respond to it and show that they're worthy of it. As they do, you extend it then more abundantly, but they need to prove it. But you start with the idea that I want to extend trust because that releases people and instead of controls them. It, when you believe in people, when you extend trust to them, they rise. People thrive on being trusted and they run with it, most people. And there's a few that don't. So you got to be careful that you don't extend too much or too fast to people, especially if they're not worthy of it and can't run with it. But it's a better way of approaching your life. You'll get more done at work. You'll get more done in your relationships. And you just have to understand when and how to extend it so that you're not Pollyannish on this and become gullible. But this is also saying that you're not becoming a control freak where you don't trust anybody. You'll build extraordinary cost into your relationships and into your company when you do that.
Well, so you believe that you can, in fact, train people to learn these skills, to develop these nuances and look at things in this way?
You know what, Tom? Absolutely. There's really two big ideas I'm talking about here. The first is that there's nothing as fast as the speed of trust. And by fast, I mean not just speed, although I do mean that. I also mean the benefits, the results, the fruits, the dividends that flow from trust.
Mm-hmm.
But the second idea is you can learn this. You can do this. You can improve it. It's not just a given of you either have trust or you don't, or you're either good at establishing it or you're not. Instead, I'm saying that these are skills and competencies that can be learned, that you can get better at. You need to understand, in fact, I maintain this, Tom, that the ability to establish, grow, extend, and restore trust with all of our stakeholders,
mm-hmm.
customers, suppliers, distributors, investors, coworkers, that ability is the key leadership competency needed in this new economy. And that it is an ability, and you can get good at it. And the whole key is to have a framework so we can think about trust, a language so we can talk about it, and a process so we can work on it. And that's what I'm trying to give voice to, is to say this is not just some intangible, kind of undecipherable concept that's nice and soft. Instead, you can quantify this, measure it, tear it apart, look at its components, understand the dimensions of it, and understand the behaviors that build trust, that establish it, that grow it in any relationship, and then act on it and get good at this.
So
that is pretty different than general conventional wisdom.
Oh, it sounds like you're taking this to a much deeper level. Okay, let's say someone's listening to this recording and they're asking themselves, how do I know that if trust is something I need to work on personally and take it another level? Let's say that they're in a position of leadership or they're teaching a team or leading some team. How do they know? What are the indicators that they know that it's time to work on trust? Because I would imagine that the average person is not walking around thinking that they need to develop trust at this level or explore trust at this level. But how would they know?
But a whole number of ways, but it's a great question, Tom, because you're right. Most people aren't addressing this.
Mm.
It's one of the great opportunities in any individual leader's or influencer's life and in any organization, because it's hardly being addressed. Well, there's a number of ways that you could assess this. First of all, you can flat out ask people, and you can do it in surveys. I mean, we have a 360 profile on this. We have organizational stuff, and there's other people that do the same. But you can also just look at any relationship and assess what's the trust level here, and give your assessment. But then maybe ask other parties their assessment. Do you trust me? Or what can we do to improve the trust here? So you can do this through your own discernment. You can do it by just thinking about it. You can do it through actual questioning and asking, because this is very much a perception that matters. You can also do it through measurement tools. There are some companies that actually ask their employees this simple question: do you trust your boss? And it is asked at every level in the company. So if I'm in the company, it's asked of me by my reports. They're being asked, do you trust your boss? Do they trust me? And I'm getting asked it of me, of my boss. Do I trust my boss?
What happens when people do that? When people are asked just that one question, do you trust your boss? And they're not saying, do you trust your boss to do this or that, but do you trust your boss?
Well, the feedback can be extraordinary. There's all kinds of blind spots. People are not aware that they're not trusted.
Ugh.
And yet they're wondering why it takes so long to get things done and to make things happen and why it's so expensive.
Right.
But they're not aware that they're paying a tax because there's not trust in many cases. In fact, look at the data, Tom. The Watson Wyatt survey showed that only 39% of employees trust their senior leaders.
Oh, my gosh.
39%. And so, you know, most employees aren't trusting their boss.
Mm.
But people may not know this, and what's worse is they don't know the cost of it.
Right.
They don't know that the impact of low trust is having on speed and cost in every dimension in their organization. But it is. I'll just give one example. Take communication, and you work a lot with people that are collaborating, communicating, working as teams.
Yes.
And your listeners do as well. But you can work on skills and all these things, and they do matter. They make a difference. But I'll take a relationship where there's high trust, and I'm communicating with someone, and the person trusts me, and I trust them. You can almost communicate the wrong thing, and people will still feel it, get your meaning.
Right.
They understand you. They fill in the gaps. The trust fills it in. But you could be with someone with whom there's low trust, and you could be very measured and precise in your communication, and they'll still misinterpret you.
Mm.
Because the trust wasn't there. They misinterpret. They see you differently. You pay a tax on that. The other, you got a dividend. And the only difference was not necessarily the communication skills at all. It's the level of trust in the relationship. That affected the trajectory of everything that happened after. And when the trust is low, see, the tax is high, and every interaction is being taxed. Every communication is being taxed. Every effort to communicate strategy, every innovation is being taxed, and we're not even aware of it. And the tax is high, and the cost is great. So it's all around us. People aren't aware. They become aware, and then they say, you know what, I never thought of it this way. I never thought that there was a cost to low trust, a real cost beyond just kind of a qualitative intangible.
Right.
But there's an economic cost and a speed cost. And they also say, I never thought I could do much about it. I thought it was kind of there or not there. I never realized that, no, I can learn this. I can get good at it. I can learn how to establish it, grow it, extend it, restore it with all my stakeholders. And I should learn how to do it. And I should get very good at it. And I should know how others view me. In other words, do they trust me? I better know the answer to that question. Do my customers trust me? If you don't know the answer to that question, you're missing out a lot because you may be paying a tax that's extraordinary or even small, but nonetheless, you're not getting the dividend that you should be getting.
I think it would be the exceptional person who would be able to handle the feedback that, no, I don't trust you. And that would be devastating for me, you know, to hear something like that, and would cause me to want to take action. Well, you have a workshop coming up November 9th and 10th at the Sundance Resort in Utah, beautiful Sundance Resort. I'm wondering if you can share with our listeners what you're going to be doing at this workshop. I know it's called Leading at the Speed of Trust. What will happen to somebody who attends this workshop?
They will walk out of this extraordinary experience understanding what they can do immediately to increase and grow and establish trust with all their relationships, with all their stakeholders, including with a specific action plan of where they want to focus on first, what relationships, what stakeholders, and how to dramatically improve the results that they're getting as a leader, as an influencer, as a teacher, by being able to establish trust and grow it with their stakeholders.
So they're going to come out with real tools.
Real tools and real action planning around taking specific stakeholder relationships and assessing trust levels and then focusing on growing the trust in order to improve the business results that they want to get. And it's very tangible, very practical. It's not just some theoretical discussion on how trust works. Instead, it's how does this apply to you? They'll also get a 360 feedback report that includes questions that are coming from people that are answering, do I trust you? And what behaviors of yours inspire trust and which do not, which actually hurt whether you're trustworthy? And are you credible with me? And it comes anonymously. There, you know, it's not just the, you know, who said this, but you will get it from the different, you know, category groups of peers, of reports, of immediate supervisor, of potentially family or friends.
And then, how many people will be attending this?
Well, it's limited to only 40.
40, so it's going to be small and intense.
We do. We want this to be intimate and very action-oriented around being able to focus on getting good at establishing and growing trust, and then specifically to focus on key relationships where doing so, you'll see the dividend pay extraordinary results to you as opposed to paying this huge tax that's slowing things down and costing more money. And I think, you know, people will also walk out with a clear understanding of what's the most important thing for them to work on personally. See, again, you don't want to just throw it over the wall of saying, well, it's everybody else that can't be trusted. Some of that may be true. Maybe other people can't be trusted. So what do you do about it? How do you become personally, unconditionally trustworthy? And then how do you learn how to extend trust conditionally? And how do you focus on your own personal credibility, which credibility is the foundation of establishing trust with everybody else?
Yes. Being responsible, I think, is what I'm hearing you saying, is that there's always, no matter what situation you're in, you can always be responsible for what's going on with your own, certainly for your own leadership and your own level of trustworthiness and how you extend that. I have two more questions for you. One is, what would people find surprising about trust, maybe from when they're going through your workshop? And maybe there's going to there's people all over the world that are going to be listening to this recording. Some may not be able to attend. What is something that they can do right now, today, that can help them build trust or become more trustworthy? So what's surprising about trust? What might they find surprising about trust? And what's something that they can do today to improve the level of trust?
Great. Here, what's surprising about trust is this, that it's an extraordinary lever. And I've said this already, but I want to repeat it. It's the hidden variable that affects everything else. It affects the trajectory of everything else. And we often don't think this way at all, but it affects literally it affects your relationships with your customers, with your suppliers, distributors, with your investors. It affects your relationships with your coworkers, the people you're serving and working with. It affects your ability to innovate, your ability to execute, your ability to create strategy, to carry out strategy. It affects your ability to collaborate, and it affects communication. It affects literally every dimension of a business and every stakeholder in a positive or negative trajectory. It's either a tax or a dividend.
Mm.
And when the trust is not high, when it's low, the tax is great. And every one of these dimensions and every one of these stakeholders groups are being significantly impacted in terms of speed, things are taking longer, and costs are going up in everything. And the opposite is true, that this so-called soft item of trust, that once we learn how it works, how to establish it and grow it, and once we do then build relationships of trust, that the speed, the results, the things that flow from it, like what JetBlue has been able to do, David Needleman, CEO of JetBlue, trusting his people, trusting these call center reservationists, working out of homes, building an extraordinary culture of trust, and building more market value in 5 years from a standing start than all the other airlines combined except for Southwest.
Yes.
It's just extraordinary. So I still maintain that what's surprising is that this is not just a nice thing to do. This is a business-relevant, quantitative, measurable economic impact on speed and cost in every business, on every team, and in every relationship.
So tell us what we can do now, today, with the group that we're working with, or even our family. What is it that, if this is at such a core level, you mentioned the business level, I would imagine that at the family level, at our just going to the grocery store, everything is going to be impacted by this.
Everything is impacted, absolutely. Okay, I'll tell you, I'll give you three things you can do immediately. And by the way, one of the things that we'll spend time on in the two-day event at Sundance is we'll go through how you build trust, starting with yourself, and then you move to your relationships, then you move to your team, to your organization, then you move to the marketplace, then you move to society at large. But you start with yourself. And at the self level, it's all about credibility. And we'll go through four cores of credibility, individual credibility or believability. And we'll address those. You'll assess them, and you'll develop an action plan for how you can become more credible, because credibility is the foundation upon which you build trust with everybody else. But credibility is trust with yourself, self-trust.
Yes.
Then we'll work on what we call the 13 behaviors of high-trust people, high-trust leaders, high-trust influencers that are common to people throughout the world. And these 13 behaviors are very actionable, and you can immediately begin to apply them in any relationship, with any customer, with any group, and also you can really assess where you're weak, what you need to work on. I'm going to give you three of those right now that you can start on. One is keep commitments. Now, this sounds easy and obvious, but you know what? It's not always common practice. The quickest way to hurt trust is to make a commitment and then break it.
Mm.
You do that with anybody, could be with a family member, immediately you lose trust. That's like the rung of the ladder going out.
Yes.
And now you're skeptical about the next step. When you break a commitment, it immediately hurts trust. You break a couple commitments, you can seriously damage it and maybe even get it to where you can't repair it.
Mm.
But the flip side is equally true, Tom. Make someone a commitment and keep it. Make a commitment and keep it. Make a commitment and keep it, and you watch how quickly you can begin to grow, establish trust with these people, with stakeholders, and even with yourself. You make a commitment to yourself. I'm going to get up in the morning, and at this time I'm going to go exercise. The alarm rings, you get up, you do it. Your self-trust and confidence in yourself has gone up compared to when you don't. You turn off that alarm, you go back to sleep, and you don't trust yourself.
And I think about that. I'm assuming that a commitment is as simple as, you know, looking at my six-year-old son saying, yes, I will pick you up today at school at this time. And it's not something like, Joseph, I commit to you at this moment, that it's not as official as that, but it's these simple agreements that we look at each other. I look at my wife and say, yes, I'll take care of that. And that's a commitment.
Absolutely. It's our day-to-day interactions, expectations, and not just some grand commitment, but
right.
It's the way we interact with people. But so you're with a new prospect, and you say, look, I'll tell you what, they have no track record with you yet. You can immediately begin to build trust by saying, you know, I'll tell you what, we'll get you that. We'll get you a copy of this, and I'll come back with this. You know, I'll do this by tomorrow. You make some commitments of meeting needs, and then you fulfill them. And they immediately say, ha, this person delivers.
Mm.
You know, your son, you pick him up at 6 o'clock, like said, and they say, I can count on Dad being there or Mom being there.
Mm.
And yes, making and keeping commitments is the number one way to both build it and to deplete it.
Mm.
And it depletes a lot faster than it builds, but it can build faster than you think. So that's a key one. I'll give a second one. Listen first. Because that way, by listening first, you learn what's important to build trust with other people. You learn what matters to them, what's important to them. Because you might be behaving in ways that you think are building the trust when in fact they're not. They don't matter to the person, or they're not, you know, you're not focusing on the things that would matter, or you're doing things that actually are undoing the good you're trying to accomplish. So by listening first, you actually build trust with people. They begin to see you as open and influenceable, and they tend to trust you more. When you don't listen first and go in and start to prescribe or do things, they don't feel like you've been influenced by them, and they tend not to trust you. They start to question your motive, your agenda. You're not influenced by them, see. They don't know if you care. And so they'll tend not to trust you. By listening first, you'll always be able to begin the process of building trust, and you can do it faster than you think. And then finally, a third one, creating what I call transparency or openness. Creating transparency. This just means to be open and real and authentic with people, as opposed to operating with hidden agendas. See, transparency and is openness. A hidden agenda is the opposite of that.
Mm.
When people sense you have a hidden agenda, they tend not to trust you. They're wondering, what's he up to? What's she up to? What's the agenda here? But when you're open, transparent, authentic, real, that is disarming to people. And they become more open to be influenced by you, and they become more trusting of you. You may need to sustain it. This is not a technique you just do thinking you'll grow trust. It's a way of being, of acting, of behaving, of being transparent and open. You're not operating with hidden agendas. And as you do that, people respond, and they tend to trust you. So you tell the truth in a way that people can verify and validate, and they trust that, and it grows and grows and grows. Transparency is one of the great ways to build trust fast. Now, you have to figure out what it means for you and your role. But the counterpart to that is the hidden agenda. That destroys it. Transparency builds it. Keeping commitments builds it. Listening builds it. We've got 10 other key behaviors that build it, and many, many more. The point is, you take these behaviors, you take these components of credibility, and you really focus on what you can do to become a very trusted advisor, a trusted influencer in all your relationships, because you understand how trust is built and formed and grown.
This is fantastic. Well, to find out more information about the November 9th and 10th, and again, this 2005 workshop, and the Sundance Resort in Utah, there's a link at the blog where the listeners have found this recording. So you can just click on that, and you'll find all the information, all the details about that. So, when the listeners see this, they will be absolutely excited about this. And your website, Stephen, can you share that, your website address?
Yes, it's www.coveylink.com. Coveylink.com. Coveylink is spelled CoveyLink.
Yes.
And I will say this, that what you'll see at Sundance is this course in action, this experience and workshop, Leading at the Speed of Trust, which is also something that is available on a train-the-trainer basis for companies, and that people have run within companies So we've done a lot of corporate work with this, government education and the like, as well as then certified trainers to be able to take this into their people. And you're going to get the experience with this to see if it's something that first will impact you to become a more trusted and effective influencer. But then secondly, you can also assess to whether it makes sense for the people that you serve.
And your book is going to be coming out next year.
A year from now.
On this very topic.
The Speed of Trust, it will be called.
The Speed of Trust. Fantastic. Well, I so thank you for your time, and I'm excited to have had the opportunity to talk with you and share your message with people, in 74 countries at this point.
Wow.
And I, too, believe that the foundation of all effective teams and the foundation of leadership is trust. And so this is a fantastic opportunity for our listeners to learn more about what it takes to really become really good at this. This is an awesome opportunity. And I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and to talk to all your listeners. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. This is Tom Heck with TeachMeTeamwork.com signing off. Thanks for listening, and make sure that you click on the link next to the blog there to learn more about the workshop Leading at the Speed of Trust, November 9th and 10th, 2005 in Utah. Thanks again for listening.